From the flea-infested studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA, it's time for another beetle-beating hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. Fleas can hop pretty high. Beetles can be a menace to an enormous variety of plants. Put them together and what do you got? Flea beetles. I'm Mike McGrath, and on today's show, we'll discuss the newest version of BT that's best against beetles. Plus, and especially heap and helping of your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and maniacally meddlesome manipulations. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens. It's all coming up like you spraying your hopping beetle problems away.
WDIY has been broadcasting in the Lehigh Valley and beyond for 30 years, providing news.
These planes were hijacked.
The Bethlehem Steel Corporation will end its steelmaking production in Bethlehem.
We hope that you enjoyed hearing from the Dalai Lama.
Local public affairs.
As I say, it's a race of interest.
What we're experiencing today will later on be studied.
And music.
My name is Janice Ian.
Our guest, Lake Street Dive.
In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Petey Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary.
WDIY, since 1995.
From the pearly white studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another bright and shiny hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks, you bet your garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and in this week's In the News, we report a surprising revelation about one of our least favorite weeds in a story that originally appeared in a recent edition of National Geographic. And we quote, purple nutsedge is one of the world's worst weeds, spreading stealthily underground and shrugging off herbicides as if they were soda water. But new research shows that for one ancient people, this noxious plant may have served as a tooth cleaner. A new analysis of skeletal remains reveals that people who lived in the Sudan 2,000 years ago were eating purple nutsedge, and those people had surprisingly sound teeth. The antibacterial properties of the weed may deserve the credit, suggests the authors of a recent study in the journal PLOS-1. Early humans generally had relatively few cavities, report the authors of the study, thanks in part to meals that were heavy on meat and light on carbs. Then humans invented farming and began eating more grain. Bacteria in the human mouth flourished, pouring out acids that eat away at teeth. The first farmers tended to have much more tooth decay than hunter-gatherers. But when scientists looked at the teeth of people buried in an ancient cemetery roughly 2,000 years ago, they found that fewer than 1% of the teeth had cavities or other signs of tooth decay, despite the fact that these people were probably farmers, says study co-author Donatella Yusai of Italy's Center for Sudanese and Sub-Saharan Studies. Analysis of hardened bits of plaque on the teeth showed that those interned at Al Khoury, an archaeological site in central Sudan on the western bank of the White Nile near Khartoum, had ingested the tubers of purple nutsedge, perhaps as food, perhaps as medicine. People buried there at least 8,700 years ago consumed the tubers, probably as food, long before the rise of farming. Experiments by other researchers show that extracts of purple nutsedge impede the growth of the bacteria most widely implicated in tooth decay, so the weed could have served as both a nutritious dinner and a primitive, if unintentional, antibacterial potion. Such a function is certainly possible, says biological anthropologist Sarah Lacey of the University of Missouri at St. Louis. No other example has been reported of a specific plant that kept tooth decay in check among ancient people, says Lacey, who calls the results very exciting. The purple nutsedge tuber may have many virtues, but flavor is not one of them. People might have tried to tame the tuber's bitterness by cooking them, says study co-author Karen Hardy of the Catalan Institution for Research and Advanced Studies at the Autonomous University of Barcelona, or they may have just tolerated the bad taste. They might have been using it for medicinal purposes, says Hardy, adding that medicine often tastes horrible, so it would be par for the course.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Today's question of the week reminds you of all the different BTs that are out there and what to specifically use them for. And a brand new one that we may even have a scoop upon that is directed solely at flea beetles. It's coming up after more of your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100. Andrea, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. Hello, Mr. McGrath. I am delighted to have the opportunity to speak with you today.
Well, I'm delighted that you're delighted to have that opportunity.
You know, after you left our radio airwaves down here near D.C. for sites unknown, which apparently turned out to be Philadelphia, it took several years, actually, to find you again.
Yeah.
And having just recently discovered your podcast, because I can't get the radio here, I listened to it the entire length, or multiple episodes, of a four-hour drive to visit my aunt in Jersey. And when I got there, I said, I just heard about a wonderful new horticultural garden in Long Island. We have to go visit the relatives up there to get and take our cameras.
And have you done that or planned to do it?
I just saw her last week.
Okay. And just remember, it's Planting Fields is the name of the estate.
Planting Fields. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Well, that's great. It's nice to know somebody's listening. All right. What can we do you for?
Well, and I learned from another one of your podcasts that the reason my squash did not survive when I replanted it last year is because it was the third year that I'd planted some type of squash or cucumber in that same bed, and then apparently now there's something evil lurking in the soil. I had planted butternut squash and then spaghetti squash and cucumbers and had rotated that way. So apparently that was the wrong rotation.
But well, squash to me is not something where the rotation is super important like it is with tomatoes. So you're in the greater D.C. area, right?
Right. We're in Zone 7. I'm in the Maryland suburbs.
Oh, believe me, I know D.C. real well. So How do you grow your squash? Do you start your plants inside? Do you buy plants?
I usually start from seed.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have time to do it inside, and sometimes I plant them directly in this little tiny raised bed. It's only about 18 by 24, and it shares its trellising with a grapevine.
That's unusual.
Yeah, but I managed last year. It's a new vine, and I needed a trellis.
Uh-huh.
So grapes on the back trellis and the squash on the front and side trellis, and they didn't bother each other, but it was the third year I'd planted squash in that bed, and it rotted very early, and then all the leaves started turning moldy, and
right.
I didn't want to the grapes, so I pulled everything out and threw them in the garbage.
Good.
Grape leaves did okay, but I did not get any grapes. But it was only the second season, so I wasn't surprised. Yeah, I thought, according to the podcast, I was supposed to leave the bed fallow for a number of years before putting squash there again, but I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do to kill the evil lurking in the soil.
Make it stop raining.
Okay, well, that's possible. I do try water every day.
But it's been raining constantly for months.
Well, not this year. But
yes.
Last year, we were dry for a long time. So
it's not last year.
Oh, well, I did not plant squash there this year. It's fallow except for the grapes.
Now you got me totally confused.
So I didn't put any squash seeds in that bed because I was afraid that there was something evil lurking in the soil that attacks squash plants if you plant too many years in a row.
Not that I'm familiar with. So you have no squash growing this year. You've totally misled me here.
No, I do, but I put it in other parts of the yard.
And how is it doing?
It's only about 2 leaves high.
Okay. And did you plant by seed?
Seed directly into the ground, yes.
Okay. Now, you realize we're in a once-in-a-lifetime deluge. I'm approaching Noah to see if he'll take 2 of my tomato plants with him on the ark because it's the only way they're going to survive.
My tomatoes are in pots on the deck under shade. They only get what water I give them.
So they aren't exposed to the rain?
The tomatoes, they get a little bit. They're on the lower deck.
Let's not talk about tomatoes. Let's stick with the squash.
You get in Philadelphia, but I have not had a deluge of rain. I've had cloudbursts that will give me 2 inches over an hour.
Okay. Now that I know we're talking about something that happened last year, everything changes. Now, you say you've let that bed go fallow. What does that mean?
I didn't plant anything in it in the one bed. I planted nothing, and in the other bed, I have the grapes growing, and they're looking great, and I actually have grapes, but I did not put any squash there. And where I had my zucchini last year, it did get too much water, and it rotted, so I didn't plant there either. I moved all the squashes to other parts of my yard.
So you don't have a problem right now?
No, I'm trying to prevent one. I want to be able to plant in that bed again.
Well, you seem to be fine. You had a 1-year failure. Did you check for squash vine borers?
No. How does one do that?
When you lift the dead plant out of the ground, it's no longer attached. And there's a little hole where the plant meets the soil line. Squash vine borer, real pestiferous, lays its eggs at the base of your squash plants. The baby caterpillars emerge very quickly, eat their way into the hollow vine, and then travel up into the vine and begin eating it away from the inside. So the first thing you notice is the plant looks like it's overwatered or underwatered. It gets all droopy. But that's not the problem. The solution is to examine the base, look for squash vine borers. If the damage isn't too bad, you can slit the vine with a razor blade, take out the caterpillars, do whatever you want with them. It's just between you and your God at that point. And then heap mounds of soil over the damaged part of the vine, and they can recover. But it's a very common problem. People miss it a lot.
I must have missed it because, yes, it drooped first, and all the little baby squashes would only get like thumb size and then die. And then the leaves turn, and I'm like, okay, at this point, I'm pulling it
okay,
out.
What I'm going to suggest is deet string beans.
Yes.
Now's the perfect time to put in a run of string beans, and they're always direct seeded. Why don't you use the space in the bed with the grapevine to grow a crop of string beans, snap beans, or even storage beans like pinto beans and things like that you harvest when they're dry. Always harvest string beans as soon as you can see them. The smaller they are, the better they're going to taste. But I don't think it's an issue of rotation. What I don't like to hear is that the bed, instead of being fallow, which means covered with some growing plant, is kind of there just empty. Nature abhors a vacuum, and you're inviting weeds to come in.
Okay, yeah, I've been plucking them one at a time. I also scooped out some of the soil that was under the squash plant that I pulled out, thinking that maybe there was something in there that I should dispose of, and that went in the trash also.
Okay, that's weird.
So I should put green beans or lima beans or some kind of bean in there.
Yes.
Not doing nothing, and then I'll have something to trellis.
Well, okay. This is the perfect time to get a crop of string beans going. You'll be utilizing that bed. Next season, keep an eye on your squash and keep an eye on this year's squash. And if you see it start to droop, look like it needs water, look like it's overwatered, examine the base of the plant very carefully. You can salvage the plants if you act right away.
Okay, wonderful. Let me just ask one last question about the watering. So when they're babies, like they're just sprouting, I try and give it water every day.
No.
No?
No.
Oh.
Never water a plant every day. Plants need to dry out in between waterings. Get a rain gauge. Set it up. Check it one day out of the week, say Sunday afternoon. If there is an inch or close to an inch of water in there, do not water. If it's empty, then especially with new sprouts, you can water twice a week, but deeply. You have to have a hose dripping at the base of the plant for a couple of hours. Short, shallow waterings are worse than useless.
Oh, well, that's what they've been getting all these years.
Yeah, you're lucky okay. You got what you got. All right, listen, we got to go.
Thank you so much for your help.
Oh, my pleasure. You take care.
You too. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody out there with an automatic sprinkler or irrigation system to be sure it's turned off if you're in an area like mine and many others of us that has received historic amounts of rainfall over the last 2 months. But don't go checking your timer technology just yet, because we'll be right back to discuss several ways to stop flea beetles and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
For the past 3 decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and you will want to stay tuned because today's question of the week is not only about flea beetles, but it reminds you of all the different BTs that are out there and what to specifically use them for, and a brand new one that we may even have a scoop upon that is directed solely at flea beetles. You won't want to miss it, and you won't. It's coming up after more of your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100. Paul, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
It's nice to have you here, Paul. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Very good.
And where is Paul doing well?
Well, I'm in Ambler right now.
Okay.
Ambler, Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Ambler is a famous horticultural site. The Temple School of Horticulture there, right?
Oh, yes. That's right.
You know, the first horticultural school in America, founded entirely by women.
How about that?
And it exists to this day, and it's a wonderful place. What can we do you for?
Well, I was my companion had her yard seeded, and the gentleman that did it, the group that did it, said leave it for 2 weeks until he gets back, and water it every day in the morning and then in the evening.
Wait a minute. You're in my territory. You're in northeastern PA. When was the lawn seeded?
Well, this is a while ago. It was earlier than that now, you know, and I guess, let's see, it's most likely maybe almost 2 months ago.
Okay, but it was seeded in the spring.
Yes.
And do you know what kind of grass you're growing?
No, it's complicated grass. I mean, it's not a pristine lawn. And
you mean he sowed the weeds already in it?
Well, I like my weeds. Well, they're not my weeds, they're her weeds. But
okay. Normally, I would have said that was a huge mistake. Cool season lawns should only be sown in, say, mid to late August, when the summer heat starts to break a little bit.
Oh, how about that?
They're called cold season lawns because they come originally from places with cold climates. In most cases, some part of the UK, whether it's England or Wales or Scotland or even Ireland. So, which I'm not sure if it's part of the UK or not. My people are crazy. But when you sow it in the spring and we have a normal summer, the young grass starts to come out and immediately gets hit with the heat that it can tolerate the least, and you wound up, luckily, you're lucky if you get a dead lawn. If you get a patchy, nasty-looking lawn, then you might be convinced to try to repair it. But most of the time, it should be sowed in the fall. And I know people don't believe it. Look it up. Go to university websites. I'm not making it up. I'm not that smart.
I'm sure you're not making it up.
But as you know, summer this year occurred in like December and January.
Yeah, it was very cool. Yeah.
Well, oh, no, we had like 80 degree days. And as we were moving into March and April, I'm still repeating, you're not supposed to, you know, put your tomatoes and peppers out until nighttime temperatures are reliably in the 50s. Well, they were reliably in the 50s in March. So, and then when the heat wave finally broke, it has been raining, and you'll back me up on this, almost constantly.
Oh, yes. I did not have to water it every day.
Well, thank you. Thank God. So they sowed this stuff in the spring. It certainly had the weather, the cool weather, and the moisture to germinate well.
Right.
And we still haven't had those warm, sunny days yet. I'm actually, seriously, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I may have to just rogue out all my tomato and pepper plants and try to find replacements somewhere. They're just drowned. Even in raised beds, I mean, the combination of way excessive water and very little sun, they look really unhappy. So where are we now? Now, this was done a month or so ago.
Yes, and what happened is we weren't supposed to cut anything for 2 weeks because he was going to come back and do it. But he, because of the rain, he was bogged down. So it was maybe 3 weeks or more before he could come back. And Shandy's daughter came to visit, and she went bananas at the fact that the grass was, you know, wild. This is big. Because the older grass was doing fine. I mean, it was growing tall. And then young grass, I could see the young grass. It was, like thin, but it was green. It was growing. She wanted to go get the lawnmower right away and start cutting, and I had to really come down and say, no, don't do that.
Good, she's wrong.
Never
cut a wet lawn.
If you
cut a dry lawn with a sharp blade, the cut is clean, and the top of the grass blade heals over and can retain moisture within a matter of days. If you cut a wet lawn with a dull blade or a sharp blade, it's going to rip the grass blades apart. They'll never be capable of holding water again. So almost never react is a good gardening rule. Don't panic and don't buy into other people's panic. You know, you're going to do the right thing no matter what they say. So I'm not surprised that your old grass is doing well, because to your old grass, it's fall, right? Except for the rain, we've had beautiful fall weather for 2 months.
Right.
It'll probably be roasting at Christmas time. So have you had enough of a break to mow the new grass?
Oh, yes, yes. He did finally come in, and he cut it, and it's doing fine.
Okay.
And the new grass is supporting itself now. What I was telling them is, you had years ago told us, if you let your grass in the springtime grow as tall as you dare, the roots will be deeper, and they will be healthier when dry weather comes. And people that are cutting their grass real low, they're going to brown out, and your grass will most likely survive longer unless, of course, the drought is really bad.
That's entirely true, except for the fact that you always want the grass to be what other people consider long or high.
Yeah, you said
three and a half inches.
3.5 inches, yeah.
Now, is your lawn cutter following that rule?
Yeah, pretty much, I think. I never measured it before, but I will be measuring it now.
But he
comes every other week, so the grass does get a chance to grow.
The heck with her, you know. Tell her to put money in a jar and, you know, you'll give it to orphans.
They listen to me, and now they see the lawn is better.
But see, if he is cutting it too short, you're not going to notice that now because there's never been a lack of moisture.
Mm-hmm.
But we should be getting the dry part of summer anytime soon. So this is the time to have that conversation. Make sure he at least mows grass in the sun at 3 inches. And that's 3 inches after cutting.
Right.
Grass in the shade should be 3.5 inches. And as you know now, it doesn't look long. It doesn't look high. It looks green.
Yes, yes.
You know, more people kill their plants in the name of gardening than help them. You know, if they would just think of lawns as real plants, we wouldn't have half the problems we have.
Yeah.
But good, I'm glad you held your ground.
So far.
Yeah, you're doing great.
Yeah, now I'm going to make them listen to this show.
There you go. Well, we can always use the nickel.
All righty.
Okay, man. Take care. Good luck. And congratulations, really.
And thank you, too. Good luck also.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Every once in a while, we get a call from a listener that would make a great Q&A on the air, but they are not available during our taping time. So that's what's coming up right now. Here's the question.
Hi, my name is Monica. I'm calling with a couple of tree-related questions. I'm calling to try to help my parents who have a lilac tree they planted near their house that had a significant limb blown off during a recent severe storm. And I'm wondering if there's something that they can do to help that exposed area where the limb was torn off to protect it from pests. The other question is, they have a couple of eastern redbud trees they've planted near their house. They planted them, I believe, in 2020. They have been doing fine up until now, and now one of them still seems to be fine and healthy and has bloomed and budded, but the other tree has not blossomed, has not gotten leaves like the healthy tree has, and when we look at it more closely, we can see it seems to have some kind of fungus on the sides of the tree and around the base of the tree. The color of the fungus seems to range from like a white or a gray color to a kind of orange color. I'm wondering what can be done to help this poor tree. Somebody told them they should replace the tree, but I would think if you don't get rid of the fungus, even if you remove the tree and put a new one there, it would be susceptible to the same fungus. I would be grateful for any advice that Mike can give us for protecting the tree, the lilac tree whose limb has been ripped off, and especially for helping this redbud tree that is being attacked by fungus, and it seems to be killing the tree. Thank you.
Well, I have to agree with the person who gave you advice. It sounds like that lilac tree or redbud, I've kind of lost track of which tree we're talking about, but it doesn't matter. I think maybe it's a redbud. The one with the fungus that, you know, hasn't leafed out well, didn't bloom, that tree is dead. It just takes a while for a tree to look really most sincerely dead. But it is dead. It should be gotten out of there. I would not worry too much about fungal organisms. But when you do remove the tree, make sure you have the stump pulled, not just ground down. Because if you just have it ground down, then you can't plant anything else there. But have the stump pulled. It's a pain in the butt, but you got to do it. Whatever it is could spread to the other redbud. And so you want to get it out as quick as possible to prevent that. Then, as to any remaining fungus in that area, I would say your best bet is, first of all, if there's any wood mulch involved here, rake it away from all your trees. Matter of fact, remove it. Just dump it in a corner or something and replace it with 2 inches of really high-quality compost. Wood chip mulch can give trees disease that's lurking in the mulch, but compost defeats disease organisms. It literally eats them for breakfast. Do you have to plant another tree exactly there? Because I would suggest you move a little to the side, maybe 2 feet away from that original spot, and plant a different type of tree. But if you're going to plant another red bud, don't plant it in the exact same spot. It sounds like they might also need some space in between them for ventilation to prevent this happening again. And as to the lilac, not really sure if you said it lost a lot of branches or one big branch, but I seem to remember an email that showed a huge branch torn off the side. It is vitally important that you do not try and help the tree. Tree sealers are useless and can cause further damage. The tree needs to have that area open to the air so it can grow new cambium over that site and protect itself. You know, that's really all you can do. It's really all you should do. I doubt if insects are going to attack it. Insect attacks on lilacs are limited to bald-faced hornets stripping a lot of the bark off in the fall to make their nests. They're really not known to attract any kind of special wood-boring insect or that. So even though it goes against your grain, just leave it alone. Don't look at it. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind all of you that one of the most important things you can buy for your garden is a simple rain gauge. Make a schedule to check it once a week, say on Sunday, and water your landscape if it's empty, but sit on your hose if it shows an inch or more. You cannot water on a schedule that ignores the weather. Instead, go by the gauge and you'll have happy horticulture. But don't go shopping for that gauge just yet, because we'll be right back to help you get rid of flea beetles non-toxically and take more of your non-toxic phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. What can you expect to hear next week? Hilarity, bad jokes, a small amount of useful information, and me. As long as these bolt cutters keep working. Boy, you know, this station must buy locks by the dozen. I'm Mike McGrath, and that's probably on the next You Bet Your Garden. Maybe. Plus your fabulous phone calls. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and we are in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will help you defeat those annoying flea beetles. Equally important, we will remind you of all of the different BTs that are in use today, exactly what they're for, and mention an old biopesticide that hasn't been mentioned in a while that is EPA registered for flea beetles. So it's a flea beetle festival, unless you're a flea beetle. And it's coming up after more of your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100. Mary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mary. How are you?
I'm great. Very, very, very excited to speak with you, Mike.
Oh, very good. Well, I'll try to tamper that down soon enough. Where is Mary Great?
I am in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. We can probably see out the window.
Yes, you can.
All right, what can we do you for?
So previously, my husband and I lived in Bucks County, and we had a problem with carpenter bees on a cedar fence. We've recently, about 2 years ago, relocated to historic Bethlehem, and we have built another cedar fence, though this time we have coated it with three coats of very, like a translucent stain. But we're concerned about carpenter bees. Is there anything preventative that's not toxic to anything that we can use?
Yes, but you should have called me before you stained the thing.
Oh, oh boy.
Well, first of all, cedar is the favorite wood of carpenter bees. It is known to be super durable and rot resistant, but it's also soft. So they love it when they make their galleries. They know the wood is going to be nice and sturdy. They just raise their young in there, and then sometimes the nests are reused by other bees the following year, sometimes not. But obviously, this is a common problem, and although they don't cause structural damage, believe it or not, people get freaked out because they're big bees flying around. And even though they are harmless to humans, we still have that primal fear of flying insects. So researchers found that if you coated it with almond oil, they were repulsed by that, and they never tried to build galleries. Now, when I say almond oil, a lot of people are thinking, oh, when I go to Whole Foods, that's $100,000 for half an ounce. But almond oil is the carrier oil for massage therapists. They buy it by the gallon, like a gallon of vinegar. And if you get it from a massage therapy supply house, or even go to your nearest massage place and see if you can buy a gallon off them, it's very inexpensive. And what I would suggest, because you have stained it already, thinking if you were to sand it down lightly so that you keep some of the original stain, but that the almond oil has a chance to sink in and penetrate, that you should be good. And more importantly, if you notice the very first signs of activity, you definitely want to get out there with some sandpaper or sanding machine and sand that area down, coat it with almond oil, and keep your eye open. I would hate for you to do it after they start to build their galleries, because they are tremendous pollinators, and they're not hurting anybody. They're just raising a family the way they have for endless millennia. But if if you can prevent it up front, they'll still be around. They'll just nest in a natural area somewhere near you and or in the neighbor's fence. And yeah. And but they'll still come and pollinate your flowers.
Okay. We'll try that. We'll try sanding the fence a little bit and trying the almond oil.
I surprised you, didn't I, that I knew something?
I know you did not surprise me, because I will forever remember the episode where you talked about the windmills near The Hague. And that, to me, was the best show I've heard in a long time.
Oh, thank you.
So I thought, when I thought of this issue, I thought, I'm gonna try to find out from Mike. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. That's a great memory. I really appreciate that. All right, you take care now.
Okay, thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. As promised, it is time for the question of the week. Battling flea beetles with a brand new BT. Amy in Knoxville, Tennessee writes, I remember hearing on a previous show that a new safe treatment was available for flea beetles. I have had problems for years with those shiny black beetles eating my Rudbeckia, and I'm determined to deal with them this year. Could you please remind me of the name of the product? Well, I suspect that Amy may have heard me talking about BT Galleria, the most recent type of BT to enter the market, often referred to simply as BTG. Little bit of BT background is in order. The original strain of BT that organic growers depend on to control pest caterpillars is BT Korstaki. Discovered over a century ago, this naturally occurring soil organism is deadly to caterpillars that eat plant parts sprayed with a solution of the biopesticide, which was then just called BT, because no other strains of Bacillus thuringiensis had yet been found that would help control pests. It is still often referred to simply as BT. But other helpful strains have since been discovered, like BTI. The I stands for the subspecies Israeliensis, so named because it was discovered in Israel. BTI products are sold in the form of granules and dunks that are shaped like small donuts. Added to standing water, BTI prevents mosquito larvae from maturing into biting adults. Female mosquitoes only lay their eggs in water, so treating water with BTI is much more effective than trying to kill adult mosquitoes, as it prevents those adults from ever appearing. Just be aware that the original form of BT, sold under brand names like Dipel, only works on caterpillars. And those caterpillars must be chewing on plant parts that have been sprayed with BT for it to be effective. It is harmless to everything that is not a caterpillar. BTI only works on mosquito larvae and nothing else. Birds, dogs, ladybugs, toads, pollinators, beneficial, and even non-beneficial insects can drink BTI-treated water without harm. And non-caterpillar pests can chew on BT-sprayed leaves without any harm. All of the BT strains are very specific. They only affect the designated target. I emphasize this because many people use the words interchangeably and are surprised when basic BT doesn't stop mosquito larvae. Remember, BT for caterpillars, BTI for mosquitoes. P.S. Don't spray BT on host plants that the larval forms of desired butterfly species feed on, like milkweed and parsley. Which finally brings me back to those pesky flea beetles. As longtime listeners know, I began extolling the virtues of a new strain of BT a few years back, BT Galleria, which was found to be very effective against Japanese beetles. Spray it on plants under Japanese beetle attack, and any beetles that munch on the sprayed leaves will stop feeding and soon die. It is equally effective on other, quote, scarab beetles, like the oriental beetles that attack the same plants in the same way as Japanese beetles, but do their dirty work unseen at night. Gardens Alive was the first company to release it publicly under the name Beetlejuice, both in a spray form for adult beetles and as a drench to prevent their lawn-destroying grubs from ever reaching adult form. In addition, it is also listed as being effective against other kinds of beetles, including the emerald ash borer, and all sorts of weevils as well. One of the insects the EPA found BTG to be effective against were flea beetles. So to keep it simple, spraying BT Galleria on your Rudbeckia or other plants under flea beetle attack should make any flea beetles feeding on the leaves stop eating and soon die. But while researching this topic much too deeply, I stumbled upon a new substrain of BTG that is specific to flea beetles called BTHAN055. Kind of makes Betelgeuse sound good by comparison, doesn't it? It was developed in China and only recently became available to the American market. I quote from its entry in Google Patents, quote, a strain of Bacillus thuringiensis HAN055 with high virulence to flea beetles was isolated, and the preparation WPHAN055 made from this strain has a significant control effect on flea beetles. I'm not sure if it's available in the U.S. yet, but as soon as I find a source, I'll let you know. In the meantime, in addition to Betelgeuse, a.k.a. BT Galleria, another proven organic control for flea beetles and a variety of other pests is Bovia bassiana, a biopesticide that's been around for a while but seems to always fly under the home gardening radar. I was able to find it for sale from several suppliers. Mycotrol, M-Y-C-O-T-R-O-L, seems to be the most common brand name. In addition, spraying the plants with neem oil has been shown to repel flea beetles. And dusting the beetles directly with diatomaceous earth, often just called DE, a naturally occurring mine substance composed of the fossilized remains of ancient sea creatures known as diatoms, will dehydrate them. And finally, a specific species of beneficial nematodes takes care of them in their early larval stages underground. I won't mangle the name here, but if you search nematodes that attack flea beetles, it should pop right up. Now, I know this is all a lot to take in. So for more information, and especially to make sure you got everything right, read this latest edition of the Gardens Alive Question of the Week, complete with references and citations by clicking the link for the Gardens Alive Question of the Week at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Well, that sure was some complex advice about battling flea beetles now, wasn't it? Luckily, you can read the details over at your leisure or your leisure by following the link for the Gardens Alive Question of the Week at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Yikes, my producer is threatening to sneak flea beetles into my brassica patch if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. No matter how you contact us, please include your location. And be sure to visit our Facebook page. You'll find new photos of all the stuff that looks good in my garden. You won't see photos of the other ones. Important updates about the show. A link to the written version of the Gardens Alive Question of the Week and links to our priceless podcasts. It's all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when he mixed mercury with uranium isotopes in the 1950 Gilbert U-238 Atomic Energy Lab he got for Christmas. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Northfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziprode. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our executive producer is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. And our incredible assistant is the awesome Ninja Sean. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and thanks to over 6 weeks of almost constant rain and very little sun, I'm ready to replace my poor drowned tomato and pepper plants with fresh stock from the garden center. And I'll be doing the anti-rain dance so they survive until I see you again next week.